Okay, so where were we? So we were, we noted that there are those who, like the Meiri and some others, maybe the Rambam, probably the Rambam, who think that demons don't exist. And it sounds like in the Rambam also thinks that Chazal didn't think they existed, right? Then you have the people who say, no, Chazal think it believed, think it exists, and therefore we have to. Right, whether that's we saw Rav Tzvi Yehuda and thinks that even within the Rambam, right, we saw the Gra, but on the other hand, the Gra thinks the Rambam did not believe in angels; he just therefore denied the Gra. And again, yes, is there forgery possibility in the Gra? It's possible, right? These things get very dangerous. These forgery things, right? It's like Rav Yehuda HaChassid has this very radical Perush in his Perush in the Torah that all of Az Yashir was written like hundreds of years later, or thousands of years later, whatever, in the time of like Tehillim, and put back in the Chumash. And Rav Moshe Feinstein was showed that piece, and he said it's a forgery. And then Rav Menashe Klein was shown the tshuva by Rav Moshe, and he says Rav Moshe never said that. Rav Moshe's tshuva is a forgery, right? Like it was like you know, like I mean, there's no end to this. I mean, sometimes things are forgeries. It's not like there aren't forgeries. There are such things as forgeries. Correct. Not just I don't like it. And I don't like that people I like said things I don't like. Right? That doesn't work. Right? So,
Like the entire section of the Bavli that was,
what?
Like the entire section of the Bavli that was, that didn't exist.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, whatever. Yeah, okay.
So, like, Sefer Enoch is like, it just doesn't exist. Like,
now.
Sefer Enoch didn't exist.
Okay. Now, I will point out. Now, it's not so simple to say. Now, some of the people who will. Now, you might say that, well, if you believe in demons, because Chazal believed in demons, that must mean that you think Chazal can never be wrong about, let's say, science, right? But that's not right, right? Meaning you can distinguish and you can say, in principle, right, it's possible that Chazal could believe something in science, let's say, and be wrong, and this is not one of them, right? So that, for example, right, so that, for example, is the position of the Ramban. The Ramban, on principle, believes that Chazal can be wrong about science. Right? Right? So he has no problem saying Chazal believed X, but I believe Y. But he doesn't believe that here. Right? Because he thinks that the people who deny demons deny it because they're influenced by other worldviews. Right? They're not saying it rationally. They're saying because they're influenced by whatever, Aristotle, whatever.
Also, unlike those other things, this comes up like all over the place. And it's
Right, and
really
it comes up all right. And
what
it.
sort of worldviews did
What?
Philosophy.
Like, whatever, you know, I mean, philosophy people, right? Or some of the Greeks or whatever.
Right.
Right, so it's not necessarily that methodologically, if you always, right, if you hold that Chazal can be wrong scientifically, that here you think they're wrong. Right, it could be that it depends on how often does something appear in Chazal, right? It could be you have to judge it, right? You have to judge it piecemeal, right? Now there were all other people, right, who also believed in it because it accorded with the science of their own time, right? So like the Rajba, right? The Rajba provides explanations that work within the science of his own time to explain why demons exist, right? Now, does you have to ask with someone like the Rajba, okay, but does that mean he would believe in it now? What? 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 It's the middle of his tshuva about alternative medicine, which is Aleph Tuf Yud Gimel. Okay? And he talks about it in several different in tshuvot. Now, on the other hand, there are, it also doesn't neatly break down to rationalists and non-rationalists because there are two people who more or less are rationalists and are, let's say, in the philosopher camp, even though they disagree with the Rambam on a lot of things, but like, let's say, on his own terms, right, in certain ways, and yet they believe in demons. So like Chasdai Kreskes and Rabbi Yosef Albo, right, who both are, you know, right, more philosophically inclined, right, even if they critique the Rambam on a lot of things, but still they're you know, they're not like totally michutz of that, right? But they still both, right, they both believe in it. And again, you can go through, right, their discussions in many, right, and then you have people who are, right, raise it as a possibility, but don't aren't committed, right? So people like Rav Yosef Shlomo Delamidigo, right? Who says maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't. I mean, whatever, right? Okay, so far what we've seen is, right, people who are convinced that Chazal believed in it, and therefore they believe in it. People who are convinced that Chazal did not believe in it, probably because they don't believe in it, right? Some who are open to the possibility. Some who believe that Chazal believed in it, but it also accords with their own knowledge of science, right? And therefore believe it, which leaves the question open, like the Rashba, and the question, well, what would he think if science no longer accorded with it, right? And the other extreme, people like the Ramban, who are open to the possibility that Chazal are wrong about science, but in this case believes that they're not, right? That's in the drush of Torah Hashem Tumima. So again, the word shadim, seirim, they appear in the Torah. And po v'sham, Chazal assume that they mean demons, right? But if it turned out that they were wrong, right? That may just mean you have to reinterpret the Torah, right? It may not have. Okay. Now. Correct. They said it happened.
Right, so they just say it happened. Right, so if you're going to say that Chazal's, you know, ability to utilize and turn their Torah and stuff from it, that is simply claiming something. It's not necessary.
So is that stronger or weaker? Right? Is it? They said a story that they saw a demon. Right? Is that weaker? Because they, you know, now you're denying what they saw. I don't know. Right? I don't know if it's stronger or weaker, right? Look, I remember I got into a fight with a particular Ram when I was in Shiva, right? Who was very insistent that there are dibukim, right? Because, what do you mean? Rav Elchanan Wasserman says that he performed an exorcism. And I believe big rabbis when they say things, right? Even if I don't understand it. And I'm like, okay. You know, there's either I could say he's lying, right? Or I could say he didn't know what he was seeing. Right? Meaning he saw someone who seemed possessed. So he thought it was a dibbuk. I don't have to think he's lying. I might just think that he was mistaken. Right? Those are not the same thing. Right? Right? It's not binary. It's not he's a liar or he's telling the truth. It could be he's telling the truth but there's another explanation. Right? That's possible. And it could be with Chazal also. Right? Good. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. Okay? So, all of this gets exacerbated. As much as in the medieval period there was discomfort with the belief in demons, right? This got worse in the modern period where demons are falling out of favor, right? I mean, barring a million and a half TV shows and movies that are predicated on demons, right? Like Hollywood is basically very into, right? Like the number of movies, it's like no one believes in Santa Claus, but there's 300 movies whose theme are the adults don't believe in Santa Claus because they lost the truth-telling capabilities of the innocence of childhood. I mean, how many movies are based on that premise, right? It's like you can't escape it. And the same is true of demons and angels and whatever, right? Right? Movies, TV shows, right? Doesn't matter, right? Yes, but it's not just that it's fantasy. It's like half of the theme in it is all these people who are all scientific, they don't believe in the celestial supernatural realm, and they're mistaken, right? Like, it's sort of, we have a weird, like a very weird relationship with it in the modern world. And then you have the people who, you know, believe that whatever, they're, you know, Scientologists, they believe that you're taking over, you know, you alien stuff. Right, whatever. So some of the founders of the Wissenschaft in Judentums, which was the beginning of academic Jewish studies, did not believe in demons and also didn't want to believe Chazal believed in demons. Others, however, now some people were hedged a little bit. So like Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes says, listen, it's not that he doesn't believe in them. He says, listen, Chazal clearly believed in it. But he notes that the Yerushalmi deals with it a lot less than Bavli. Yeah. Right? So what he seems to be saying is, listen, it's not that they exist, right? He seems to say they exist, but if we believe in it more minimalist, okay, right? Not Nishkeferlach, right? Not the biggest deal, right? Rav Hirsch, right, who's like celebrated as like one of the, right? Rav Hirsch, actually the very surprising position, and Rav Hirsch position on a lot of these things is, what? No, is, who knows? Yeah, he says, a related topic is the question of magic, astrology, demons, and such like. He says, who dares get involved in a dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban, following whom the camp of Israel split in two such matters? And if so, every intelligent person is entitled to adopt either view in the absence of either being ruled out. Alternatively, in my view, this is the more correct approach. He can admit that he has no clarity on the matters. Right? He says, I don't know, whatever, who cares, right? And I will admit without shame, then he goes on, he says, I will admit without shame that I have never bothered to investigate and analyze the nature of these things, just as I've never been curious to investigate and inquire as the nature of the world to come, the world of the resurrection, and so on. For the truth of these things is concealed from everyone, and it is impossible to attain clarity on these things without decisive proofs. With what difference does it make with regards to matters of witchcraft and such like? The truth lies with the Rambam, whether the truth lies with the Rambam or the Ramban. Either way, we have to distance ourselves from such things, whether they are genuine or nonsensical. He says, how much, right? I do remember getting into a fight once in high school with my 10th grade Rebbe. And at some point, I said to him, like, that my, you know, at least in 10th grade, I was, like, very sympathetic to Rav Hirsch, which was, okay, you want to believe in magic, you don't want to believe in magic. Why do we have to have so many issues? Why are you so convinced? Like, the Ramban says there's magic, but it's usur. The Ramban says there's no magic. You're going to get so angry at someone who says, I hold like the Ramban. I'm not going to do magic, but I believe that there is in theory, but I don't know what... You need to give me 25 shirim about why obviously the Rambam is right. I mean, maybe he is, and if he isn't, it's going to shake your emunah. I mean, like, okay, at some point, like, a person's like, okay, man, who cares? Who cares? Right?
Not a bit of Torah.
What? Meaning, either magic doesn't exist, and therefore yeah. It's usher to, right, to, like, pretend you're doing magic, or it does exist, and you're usher to do that. Okay, so, like, right, certain people get really worked up about it. It's like, you believe that magic exists, but it's usher, right? I mean, like, okay, look, if someone told me that they believe in the Kutzker, okay, what? Right, the Kutzker, that there used to be demons, and the Rambam passed them out of existence. Oh. So, I think that's odd. Very odd. I really do think it's very odd. But like, l'may nafkamina, right? If someone says there are definitely no demons nowadays, the Rambam paskin out of existence, and I firmly believe this, I'm like, I mean, it's very odd. I grant you it's very odd. But like, really, how worked up can you possibly get about this? Right? Like, what? I don't know. That's what he says. That's what he says. I don't know. Out of deference to the Rambam, they said, oh, you say we don't exist? Sorry. We will disappear from it, from the existence, from the cosmos. I don't know. If I remember correctly, that I couldn't find a reference for it. At some point, someone showed me the reverse, which was, but then with the Gra paskin against the Rambam, they came back into existence. I mean, in the Dabar Sof, for God's sake. I don't know what to, I don't know what you want from my life. Right? What? Whatever, I don't know. So that's also legitimate, which is to take the non-committal, right? The non-committal approach. I will note, by the way, right? Slifkin is convinced that that Rav Kook never said they one way or the other. But like I said, in two places, he really does sound like. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Okay. Now, until now, guys, until now, what we've basically been doing is, did Chazal believe in it? Did Chazal not believe in it? Do we need to believe in it if Chazal did? Do we not? Do we have to be, and then as we said, there's the same thing about Rishonim. Do I have to believe that all the Rishonim agreed with me, or am I okay with saying, I agree with the Rambam, but I'm okay that the Ramban existed? Or do you need to be, no, anybody that was ever important believes what I said. I can't. Right? I did like Rice Lifkin's thing, right? That's rationalist demon dogmatism, right? Which is, right? No, if I hold it, everyone always held this. It's like, no, that's just not how life works. People, you don't want to believe Chazal believed in it, yalla. Okay. So let's say you don't believe in it. Wait, so one second. Let's say you don't believe in it, and you believe Chazal did believe in it. Okay, so what do you do? Right, methodologically. So one possibility is to say, look, Chazal were making not a theological claim, they're making a scientific claim. And just like many poskim assume that Chazal can make mistakes in science, and we don't have to be bound by them, right? Because they weren't scientists, and they were doing the best they could, right? So, same thing as here. They just made a mistake. And then, if you take that approach, so then your approach to these Haggadah Torah, basically, they're wrong, let's move on, right?
So, if you just, like, learned all of Gemara Shas and you just skip those sections, you
presumably. Sure. I mean, you know, Rav Schechter said about the medicine stuff, right? Rav Schechter said you can make a seum and just skip it, because it's worthless. Wow. When you were in YU, he just said make a seum and get it and skip those two blocks. Big deal. They're not, there's no point.
Sounds like a big deal.
Take it over to Rav Schechter. Then there are some people who will just, like, you know, ignore it, right? We'll say, listen, you know, One second. Maybe you don't have to. But then there are some who tried to actually give explanations and say, you know what? Maybe Chazal weren't exactly right, but they're getting at something, right? Not just metaphorically, right? They're actually getting at something. So probably the most well-known who did this, and I heard this already when I was in Rambam, but I found that in academic books, they build on this piece also. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, listen, Chazal are getting at something. What are they getting at? What? Yeah. I mean, what they're basically, Chazal are basically saying, what are demons for Chazal? Well, before we get there, Chazal are saying that demons are those things which we can't see, but we see their results, right? We see their impact, right? That's what a demon is, right? And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik therefore said, what? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik basically said, what is that? Right? It's essentially germ theory. Right? That's essentially the way we relate to germs. Right? Let me read it for you. 1 second. God. So I don't actually have this book at home. It was published many, many years ago. So I posted on Facebook a few days ago. Can someone send me the pages in Rav Aaron Soloveitchik? Baruch Hashem, I have a lot of wonderful friends. I got many people sending me copies for the Rambam guys. Aaron Friedman sent me a copy. Yeah, Aaron. We love Aaron. We do. We were the same year. We're the same year in Rambam. And Gush. We were together for many years in school. Aaron's great. Aaron is my age. We're 33. Same year. I hate the fact that you think I'm... You haven't learned yet that you should not do this. What?
He's a social terrorist.
You really aren't good at this. You know that? You're really... What? Oh, God. You guys are terrible. You guys are trying to make us all miserable. Okay? Fine. So let me read it. Let me read this to you. Okay. He says as follows. There are two kinds of conflict between Torah and Mada. One is a specific conflict, which means there's a discrepancy between a halacha and the Torah and scientific knowledge. Then there's a general conflict in the theories and foundations of belief on such issues as biological organic evolution. Debates on such conflicting issues are not new to our generation, but actually date back to the days of the Rambam and even to the age of Rav Sajagon. How, for example, are we to understand discussions in the Talmud that describe Shadim, Ruach Ra, Mazikin, spirits, evil winds, and demons? These notions are absolutely not in consonance with science. Modern data have no place for supernatural beings with black wings floating in the air, thousands to our right and thousands to our left. In the days of Sajigon, in the days of the Rambam, this issue in particular was a focus of controversy, with Jewish scholars split over whether such topics in Talmud are to be understood literally or figuratively. In my opinion, in accordance with the Rambam's explanation, Perush HaMishnah, etc., these invisible demons are thousands of germs to our right and left. The Talmud Arabin presents the case of a man who was carried or forced to walk out 2,000 cubits beyond the city limits by an evil wind, and who incidentally is not allowed to walk further upon recovery. The Rambam in Shabbos calls the evil winds melancholia, melancholy, a disruptive force that cannot be seen. Similarly, in Shabbos, we are told to pour water over each of our hands three times a man rising in the morning to rid ourselves of the evil wind upon our hands. Many intellectuals analyzing these passages in the Talmud jump to the conclusion that Tanaim and Amoraim were superstitious. The true explanation, however, is very simple. The Gemara refers to invisible destructive factors, such as germs, which are microscopic, for the reason that one who is unaware of poor sanitary conditions can become afflicted with glaucoma. The Torah warns us to wash our hands three times. Although today we have faucets and perhaps more effective methods of cleaning our hands than simply pouring water over them, nevertheless, we're not at liberty to modify this halacha on the basis of the times. We can now apply this definition of the Rambam to other instances in the Talmud where Shadim are mentioned. The Mishnah says, if one is in a pit and yells, write a writ of divorce for my wife, they may write, etc. And the Gemara says, well, what about a shame? So then the Gemara says, well, he saw a shadow. It goes on, right? And then it says, well, demons also have shadows. And the Gemara says, no, he saw a bevoa de bevoa, a shadow of a shadow. Human beings have shadows of shadows, but demons only have shadows, and not shadows of shadows of shadows. What? Correct. Exactly. To trick a woman into thinking she's free. And here, what? So,
you're not discussing the situation of a demon stuck in a pit asking for divorce.
No, we're talking about a demon trying to give a get on behalf of someone else's spouse.
Isn't that a good thing? Because then she's not going to do that anymore.
No, she's married, and you're giving her you're giving her divorce that her husband didn't give her. So she's, which means that when she will be marrying while still married, and therefore the children will be mamzerim, and she'll be committing adultery. Bad times. Here, too, shade refers to an invisible destructive force. In this case, shade... What? So what? The kids are still mamzerim. Yes, the kids are mamzerim. They can't marry anybody. What if the husband shows up tomorrow? And she's already remarried and had... Right? In this case, shade would refer to a figment of the listener's imagination that stands to cause harm to the marital situation of the husband and wife. Many people, when they are fearful, tend to imagine sights and sounds that don't really exist, and sometimes their hallucination is quite lifelike. Based on this psychological insight, we can now understand the Gemara saying, shade them have shadows refers to the fact that detrimental hallucinations and imagery are often quite lifelike. However, if one sees a shadow of a shadow, something perceivable only in reality, something too clear to be a hallucination, then one knows that it's real and not just detrimental imagery. This is the explanation according to the Meiri, right? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik basically says, listen, demons don't mean demons. What they mean are unexplained forces of damage. Could that be germs? That could be depression. That could be whatever, right? Chazal, this was Chazal's language for it, right? So you could say either Chazal meant it, right? Or you could say no, right? So one way is to say Chazal meant it. Another way is to say Chazal were describing something as they knew how to describe it. Right? And we describe it, like, meaning, did Chazal mean it was germs? Did they know about germs? Or Chazal were describing Shadim as the catch-all for things that clearly have real-world results, even though I don't know exactly what it is because I can't see them. Okay. Right? We have that. It's called germs.
But
right? They called it Shadim. Right?
How does he explain Gemara's then that, like, they're like, how do you see it, and that they have chicken feet, and that...
And the answer is, maybe you don't explain every Gemara, but that, as I said, you could say, you have to...
About specific
see, again, you could say it's not compelling, you could say that, or you could say, listen, I have a general approach, does it work in every Gemara? Maybe not, but it doesn't bother me, right? Okay? I did find an article, this was very interesting, in an academic article called Demons and Illness from Antiquity to the Early Modern Period by Gideon Bohak. This particular article is Jewish. Oh, okay. It's an academic piece, and the whole book is not exclusively Jewish, but this article is about where he actually follows more or less Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. But he takes it a little bit farther. He doesn't say that Chazal believe it. He says, my aim is not to show that ancient Jewish demonology was a precursor of modern bacteriology, but to use comparative analogy between an ancient thought system and a modern one in order to organize the abundant evidence for the ancient system in a more coherent manner. In so doing, I seek to highlight not only the similarities between the two systems of thought, but also to stress the many differences between them. In other words, I use modern views of germs as a heuristic device with which to sort out and classify the abundant data about ancient Jewish demonology. So, what does it mean, the 1,000 and the 10,000 and the whatever, right? So he says, listen, what's the Gemara essentially saying? There are 1,000 on your right, 10,000, whatever. They're saying, what are they saying? There are these forces all around you. And then what do they say? If you want to see them, one way is to put chicken feet, right? They put, ashes in the floor and you'll see chicken feet. And the other is to use the placenta thing and see them directly. He said, that's really just, if you really boil down the Gemara, what's it really saying? There are two ways of detecting demons' presence. No. Directly or indirectly. Right? That's what the Gemara is really saying. Right? And he says, right, indirectly means, essentially, you can see the results. Right? I know they exist because I know that there are results. And the other is to see them directly, which, I mean, right? Now he says, beyond that, right, so far we've been talking about demons badly, but as we note, right, demons and Chazal also do good things, right? But he said, the truth is that that's how we think about bacteria also, right? On the one hand, there's disease, but there's also probiotics, right? Yogurt, right? Fermentation, right? Meaning, there are all these things we don't really see. We know they exist. We know they have effects, right? Good and bad, right? Maybe good in moderation, whatever, right? And he said, Jews in antiquity would have found this puzzling. Right? And they would have called it a demon, right? Meaning, what is demonology for him, really? It's the catch-all for a comprehensive system of all these forces that do good things and bad things that we don't quite understand, but we know they have an effect, right? So he's saying microbiology is the modern version of it, right? It's the same type of idea. He says it's, right? It's.
So the reason that they're more on the right side is because most people are raised, they use the right hand more. So
I don't know. I mean, again, you know. And he says, right, the Gemara is focused on how to protect yourself from demons, just like we do, right? Right? They're not demons per se, right? What bacteria lahavdil. There are all these things we can't see, right? And we don't always get it right. Think about corona, right? Literally for the last 2 years, right? We know a lot about bacteria. We know a lot about germs, a lot about viruses, right? And yet, mask, not mask. Open windows, not open windows, right? Triple layer mask, double layer mask. Vaccine, not it, right? This vaccine, that vaccine, vaccine deniers, right? Meaning, right? Like, we deal with it prophylactically, but we do our best, right? And even with all the knowledge we have, right? So when Chazal are saying a demon's probably there, avoid this, right? That's not crazy, even if it turns out they're wrong, right? Like, you remember at the beginning of the pandemic that, you know, Fauci was saying, don't wear masks, it makes it worse, right? Because, remember that? Right, he never said that, right? Yeah, okay, right? I mean, like, right? So he says, basically, he says, look, in the Jewish world of late antiquity, just like today, observing some basic rules was supposed to help you minimize the danger of demonic or microbic attacks. But as we know, no method of passive prevention provides a complete defensive shield. And these must be supplemented by other more active models, right? In our own world, one common type of prophylaxis against germs is the administration of immunizations, right? Some are given to the entire population. Some are given at a young age. Maybe this is cutting too close to home. I don't know, whatever, right? So there they didn't have that. What they did have was incantation bowls, right? And if you want to look at all the demon incantation bowls, you'll discover that throughout the ancient Greece, right, they have all these bowls that have all types of inscriptions and to ward off demons, right? Right? And of course, just like we have therapy, they also had therapy, right? They had all types of, right, prognosis of things. And different treatments, right? I mean, you go through the Gemara, I mean, that's what it is, right? And again, it could be that some of it, as Ron Salvage said, isn't germs, it could be depression, right? Right? Exorcisms and stuff like that could be more about whatever, you know? Right? And then he says, right now, there are obviously differences, right? Meaning, as much as you want to say they're parallel, there are differences, right? He says, look, germs, they attack us either through contagion, right? Or, um, right? Right, we deal with them also in a society to deal with epidemics. He said in the ancient world, right, it was mostly a private affair. Right? Another is there a personality to them, right? Demonology obviously assumes a certain level of personality, right? They're attacking you, right? Where viruses and bacteria we assume are not evil. We don't personify them the same way, right? I mean, so there are differences, right? But his point is that, right? And again, it's a very interesting article, right? Where, you know, you got to figure out why it attacks one person, why it doesn't take another one, right? But his basic argument is that, right, besides the fact that, right, for him, the major difference is, as he says, the analogy breaks down, the ancient views of demons and our notion of germs really break down. For us, germs are tiny creatures devoid of any sense, and it would make no sense at all to recite or write elaborate incantations in order to ward them off, right? It's a pretty depressing thought, since it would mean that when our chemicals fail us, there's virtually nothing else we can do. Yeah. Thank you. Preaching to the choir there, right? But on the other hand, right, but he says, to sum up, there are many similarities and just as many differences between the Jewish view of demons in late antiquity and our view of germs. Perhaps the most important difference is that for us, germs are an utterly, what did I just say, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. We conclude by noting that the ancient Jewish conceptualization of demons was in some way similar to our views of germs, and in other ways quite different. But there's one more aspect of this comparison, which to us might be the most important one, namely the scientific validity and practical value of these belief systems. This is especially true of the effectiveness of the treatment of illnesses within a demonological ideology versus the effectiveness of modern medicine. Such a comparison is no doubt valid, but it is relevant only when one has a choice between the two systems. When we have a severe in-person headache, we do not start writing amulets, but go to a doctor who will perform elaborate tests, etc. Right? Whereas in late antiquity, right, they didn't. Yes. But he says, my question was about how ancient Jewish conceptualization of demons made sense within their own world. And my answer would be that they were as integral to their general worldview and their everyday behavior as microbiology is to ours. Moreover, while the treatments they developed on the basis of their ideologies were not nearly as effective as our own, they are no less coherent within their society than our treatments are in ours. For in a world full of demons, talking about them, adjuring them, writing amulets and incantation balls against them, or setting them upon one's enemies all made perfect sense. Right, and I think the benefit of an ideal of a version like this is saying, listen, is this what Chazal meant? Not per se, but the point is they're not irrational, right? What they said, what they were doing was giving their best explanation of what there was, and it parallels, right? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, I think, goes a little bit farther and says Chazal meant this in some way, right? But a slightly less extreme view is Chazal didn't mean it. Chazal were explaining and doing the best with what they had. And we have. So remember, what I said is that it's possible to say the Chazal not necessarily believed it, but we're open to it. Meaning, this was the best explanation they had. Did they believe it? I mean, probably. But they believed it in the sense that we believe in, right? Microbiology, right? And yes, do we know that we're going to make mistakes? Right? Yes. Meaning, it wasn't even so long ago, right? For example, cancer. Right, it wasn't so long ago that people believed that all cancer was caused by viruses. Right, this was true until like the 80s. Right, that there were many scientists that were searching for it. Right, and then we went to the opposite extreme and said no, it's not. Right, and nowadays, right, there are certain cancers that are, right, based on viruses, and certain which are completely, as far as we can tell, right, not. Right, but like, if tomorrow there was a new virus that was discovered that was the cause of all cancer, I mean, how many of us would that, like, shake our emunah in science, right? We would say, like, no, like, this is an ongoing process, like, right? So right now, do I believe that all cancer is caused by viruses? No, because the best available knowledge is that it isn't, right? Okay. 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 Yeah, okay. Anyways, fine. So... I will read you. Okay, so to sum up here, right? To sum up here, basically, one very important view here that Rice Lifkin says at the end is it's important to realize that belief in demons is not inherently irrational. right? In the context of the ancient world, it was a perfectly reasonable belief. Indeed, it can be argued that it was the most reasonable belief.
Right?
I mean, part of it is just that, right? This doesn't mean that it makes no sense. Right? Okay, so let's just summarize what we've seen, right? I think just to open this discussion, again, it took an hour and three quarters just to get this far, right? Is that we really have a lot of possibilities, right? On the one hand, you can believe that, again, let's go through it. Chazal never believed in it, and therefore we don't. Mi'iri, probably the Rambam, right? People like that. Chazal did believe in it, and therefore we must believe in it, right? Or Shido Cook, for example, and everyone always believed that, right? Even the Rambam, right? Then there are people who say, listen, Chazal either
we're open to it,
and we, right, Ravar and Soloveitchik, right, we're open, we, Chazal meant something like German theory, or like Bohak says, no, like, Chazal were open to it because of the best explanation, and we have the best explanation, they're parallel, right? Does it work every piece of evidence? No, right? Then there are the people who say, listen, maybe some people in Chazal believe that, right? Then there are people who say, listen, Chazal believed in it. Chazal could be wrong in science. And then either the Ramban, they can be wrong in science, but here they were not, right?
Or
they can be wrong in science, and they were wrong here, right? And big deal, it's not a problem, right? Now, obviously, right, if you go in the direction of, let's say, the Ramban, or the Miri, right, then you have to go and you have to come up with a metaphorical explanation for every single case in the Gemara. If you say that, no, this is Chazal's best attempt, you really don't. Now, that doesn't mean you never can, right? It could be, remember, methodologically, it could be that sometimes Chazal meant it literally, because that's what they thought scientifically happened, and sometimes they used it metaphorically, right? Lidugma, right? Sometimes, when we say sick, we mean, like you're sick, like you have a cold, you have, right? And sometimes we mean, you're sick, right? You're sick, right? I mean, we use the same word, right? We use the same word, right, to mean different things. So it could be that even Chazal, they believed or were open to demons, and yet sometimes they meant it metaphorically, right? Right? Like sometimes we'll say you're sick, sometimes we'll say in a good way, you're lovesick, right? Like sick can mean a lot of things, right? So it could be that Chazal also, so now Josh is going to say, if you believe it's not literal, what about that Gemara? So the answer could be, some of the Gemaras were Chazal actually telling you what they thought was happening in Mitzvot, and maybe they were right, maybe they were wrong. And in some of them, they were using it as a mashal, right? And you got to mix and match, right? What?
It's tough.
So tough, so it's not true?
No.
Okay, very good, right? Okay. So that is... It's not smooth, it's not easy, right? But it might also be right, right?
It's
the truth... Now, I do in this sense agree, though I do in this sense very much, I think, right, on one of his blog posts that I really do agree with, Rice Lifkin, what is very important is to not be a dogmatist in the sense that standing here, we know that there are very serious people on both sides of this debate. We can very much believe that there are or are not demons. But it doesn't help anyone to say that what I think, anybody who I ever respected, right, like... It's also important to be able to say the Ramban believed in demons. Maybe I don't, but I still respect the Ramban. Right? That's like important, right? It's very unhealthy to feel like you can't have respect for anybody unless they agree with you, and therefore you become a dogmatist, not just in what's true, but in what everybody else thought was true. Right? Right. It's better to be like the Ra, which is, I love the Rambam, but you know, he was influenced by philosophy and this is heresy and throw it in the garbage. But like, he's great, awesome in other ways. Just in this way, he's like really, really atrocious. Right? You want to do that? Fine. Okay. Right? That lets you go to sleep at night? Gesundheit.
Not anymore.
What is the debate like having, what is the actual effect of this debate? Like, let's say we have to.
And this is why I think, you know, if someone said, I hold like a first, which is, I don't know. Stop giving me a headache. I don't care. Yalla, let's move on. Right? I think it's fine.
No, like, let's say, okay.
Well, there were halachic things that we saw.
Everyone agrees, like, we would, like, we would.
Yes, but the Rambam manages to think those halachic are true without demons.
Yeah, but some people might not say that.
Correct! Fine!
So there is none.
There could be. You're right. There could be.
Like, how would we actually change our lives, like, if we end up, like, choosing
the demons? We might leave our balls more away than.
Yes, exactly.
Wait, would we end up doing those practices?
I don't know. Would you?
I would.
Fine. Okay. Okay, guys. So let's talk about some other possibilities. Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Ellman, he was in YU when I was there. He has an interesting possibility. So at some point in his article, he suggests that it could be that some of these Gemaras are satirical, right? So, like, even if they sort of believe in demons, like the one that, oh, there's 1,000 on my right and 10,000 on my left, and you burn the placenta of, or whatever, right? It could be like, okay, people believe in demons, but like some of the Gemara, you just got to read with tongue in cheek, right? Right, and they're in, you know, whatever. So he does suggest that perhaps it's somewhat satirical. Which is an interesting attempt, right? This is in his, this is in his article on the Savuraim. So he says, right, so this is his, he says, is there a hint of mockery in this catalog attributed to Rava? Was his ridicule, if ridicule it was, directed at a Zoroastrian trend within Babylonian Jewry? He says, it could be, but it's right. Given our knowledge of whatever, it's difficult to discern the origin of such a tendency. Everyone believed in demons. The only question was how central they were to the theological concerns of a particular religion, right? So what he's saying is, listen, it could be that maybe the Chazal did believe in demons, but that doesn't mean that everything they said was dead serious, right? It could be that they believed in demons, but other people believed in them more and made it more central, so, you know. Okay. Let's make some other points about demons, right? So far, that was just about do they exist or not. One thing that's been pointed out, which I think is very interesting, Saronis points this out, some other people I saw point this out as well. Okay, whatever demons are, whether they exist or not, let's go through some of the Agadotot. Okay? One of the things that's interesting is that some people think that the Chazal's treatment of demons, whether they believed in it or not, is in an important way a response, or at least in distinction to the Zoroastrians, because as we mentioned, the major religion of the area was Zoroastrianism, and one of the things that's true of the Zoroastrians and some of the other religions, Manichaeans and others, is that there was very strong dualism, right, good and bad, and therefore there was a very developed demonology of the good and bad type, right, and that wasn't just true in the Zoroastrians; it was also true of some of the heretical Jewish sects. So, for example, as much as we have demons in Chazal, the Qumranites have a heck of a lot more, right? So the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Dead Sea Scrolls, Qumran, right? The people at Qumran. So how many of you actually looked at the Dead Sea Scrolls once in your life, gone to the Israel Museum, right? So you probably saw the scrolls of the children of darkness, children of light, right? They believed that the whole world was a fight between the forces of good, the forces of right? The forces of evil, and demons are part of this discussion. Whatever it is that Chazal believe demons are, which we've now talked about for an hour and a half, Chazal clearly don't believe that. Right? They are very not dualist here, because, how do you know? Because Ashmodai, what does Ashmodai do all day? He learns Torah in Shamayim, right? Ashmodai in that Gemara, in part of the Gemara, he learns in Shamayim, in the Beis Medrash, in heaven every day, right? But then at the end of the story, he tries to sleep with Shlomo's wives while they're Nida, which means that here you have the king of the demons that is described on the one hand of being a Talmud Chacham in God's base medrash, on the other hand, right? And then you have, you know, Yosef the demon who tells the rabbis how to, right? Basically, there's the story in the Gemara of Yosef the demon. What? It's a good name. And basically, he gives the rabbis advice and says, oh, you know, there's a malevolent demon who's trying to come. And he gives them a whole advice. This is how you chase him away. This is the weapons you bring. This is how you make sure he's not here. Because I've been living here as a demon for years, and I've never bothered you. But that demon is coming, and oh my God, that guy's a jerk. Right? Let me explain to you how to get rid of him. Right? That Gemara very clearly, right? What is it doing? It's saying that whatever demons are, it's not part of a dualist worldview. Right? Right? And they're still, right? There are good demons, there are bad demons. Right? But that's very important. Right? One second. But this is very important. Right? Because this means that even if Chazal, to whatever, even if they believe in demonology, right? Their demonology is very explicitly anti-dualist. Right? Which is important. Right? If your whole religion is based on good of evil, right? The bad, right? Angels are good, demons are bad. And now here you have Chazal who are saying, well, there's the seven-headed demon who disrupts the Beis Medrash. And then there's the, and then there are these demons who tell us what's going on in the Beis Medrash, right? And Sarah Ronis also points out, what's the simple read of the Gemara? One second. What's the simple read of the Gemara in Bracha that we read? Daf Vav? No, not the first half.
If you would be able to see all of them.
Yeah, where?
Right next to you.
When? No!
In the Beis Medrash.
Yes, the whole framing is when? When do the demons come in droves?
To learn Torah.
Because every 6 months, all of Klal Yisrael comes together for the Shir, and hey, the demons want in on it, right? So you know why it's so squishy, right? Because the demons are there. And remember, what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, why do the clothes of Talmidei Chachamim wear out? Because demons are constantly rubbing against them. That means, not everybody else, the clothes of Talmidei Chachamim. That means that this Gemara, as weird as this Gemara is, what are they telling you about demons, whatever they are? They want to come and learn. That's what they're doing. They are stuffing the Beis Medrash, right? They are stuffing themselves into the Beis Medrash, right? Which means that, again, whatever we think about demons, right? At least some of them are stark, right? But the point is, they're not, right? This is not, right? Even if Chazal have a very extensive demonology, in most cultures in the ancient world, and even the modern world, right? To the extent that people believe in demons, it's part of a dualist worldview. There's good and bad. There are things in this world that are intrinsically evil, right? Angels are intrinsically good, right? And demons are intrinsically bad, right? And what? We're not. Not at all. We're not disruptive. No, they are less disruptive than most people I've had in my show. Right? They have never once interrupted me. Never once. How do you know? Maybe they're asking me questions. You don't hear them. Maybe I do. You don't know. Right? Because they're not people. So in the right in the Agadot, it seems like they do. Right? No. Who said that? Who said that? Who said they're the only ones who have Bechira? Who said that? Who said the only people who have Bechira are human beings? Who said that?
I thought that was a given. That's like what our Sikha is.
Who says the only thing? Who says we only have Bechira? Why do you assume that? Why do you assume that? That's not at all clear.
There's no separation between mankind and everything else.
Okay.
So you're just now deciding that you're going to create mankind to a bunch of animals.
Yeah, you know who else didn't think human beings were the center of the universe? The Rambam. Yeah. Right? If you want, you can read Rabbi Lamb's article on extraterrestrial life, where he points out the question of whether or not there are aliens is a question of whether human beings have to be the center of the universe, right? Including, can there be other beings out there with Bechira that are not under our rule? And he said, it's Machlok Rishonim, and according to Rambam, yeah, there's no particular reason to believe that it's not true. Yeah. They have Bechira. What's the problem? Yeah, Josh.
It's really interesting that like this Gemara is really close to the one about where Moshe asks Hashem like how things work, and he says, and Hashem answers that it's not just good and bad. There's a side that isn't Gamor Russia.
Yeah, right. Chazal are very much not now. Not in her dissertation, but in a separate article she wrote, which she touches on in her dissertation, but it's, right, she notes, so Sarah Ronis notes that you actually follow Chazal's description of demons. So, look, one of her basic claims in the dissertation is that whatever you think about demons, one of the unique moves that Chazal have about demons is that they halachaisize, rabbinicize demons. Right? The Chazal, the one of the way Chazals control demons is by replacing them within the rubric of halacha. Right? Right? That's what they do. Right? They have discussions with the Midrash. They're subject to halacha. Right? They're relevant in halacha. Right? That's what we do. Right? Right? The whole sugya of zugot, do this, but if it's a mitzvah, so it doesn't count, they can't affect that, right? Meaning, we subject demons to halacha, right? That's how we control them. So, in one of her articles, she notes that Chazal also seem to think with demons, right? Think using demons as one of their rubrics, in terms of defining their space. I thought this was very interesting because it touches on a few Gemara and Brachot. Meaning what? So she says, well, what does that mean? She says, right, so she said, what does it mean to define space? It means part of your goal in life is to define the boundaries of your existence, right? And she says it's really what the Gemara is doing, especially in Brachot. Because what does the Gemara do? First, you have the Gemara on Gimel, right? And the Gemara says, where are demons found? No, that's above, on Gimel.
In the field.
In the ruins, right? Out, if you're in the middle of nowhere, out in a field, that's where you have to be worried about demons the most.
Right?
And then they go, right, they go in, under what circumstances, right? Fine. And in this context, what do demons symbolize? That which is out of society, that which is dangerous, that which to avoid, right? That which is, right? But on the other hand, they're not, as she said, they're not, in this Gemara, they're not rapacious and uncontrolled, right? They very specifically stick to certain places, out of society, that's where they are, right? If you go there, you're in danger, right? So the discussion, the dangers of ruins here articulates a connection between the demonic and certain places, ruins, old and new, distant fields, and the like. And therefore, in this case, regarding this source, we might think the demons are located only in the outskirts of the rabbinic world, and indeed they are. They serve to create a border, a periphery. On one side is safety, and the other, danger. Okay? But, on the other hand, she said, but sometimes they are at home. Right? So, for example, in Psachim Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, the Gemara talks about the demons in the palm trees, right? That if you have a palm tree and the shadow falls on you, right, then you're, right, that whole discussion, or if you sleep in the shade of a single palm tree and you're in a courtyard, your blood is on your head, right? So, in this Gemara, demons are, right, under certain circumstances, and certain shades, and certain whatever, right, in your house when you go to sleep. Right, and then she notes that if you go through the Gemara there, right, Chazal on the one hand will mitigate the danger, and the other ones they'll heighten it, depending on, right, what you're talking about, what type of palm tree, what type of wall, right? Now then Chazal have another thing there, which they say, that if you have a palm tree and a wall, right, so it's very dangerous to go in that space, unless there's more than four, right, dalet amot there, then it's not harmful. And even if there aren't dalet amot, you're squished, but there's another path through, then you're fine. Right, now, what is the imagery of Chazal here? Demons are where you are, but they only bother you if, basically, you have them against the wall. Right? If you're walking through the wall on the palm tree, but there's another path, so don't worry about it. The demons won't bother you. It's only if you're in the place and there's nowhere else to go and you squash in and that's where they happen to be, right? Then you have them against the wall, right? Then, at the other extreme, you have the demons here in the Beis Medrash, in the home of the rabbinic world, right? Right? Every time we go to the Kala, that's why you feel crowded, because there's, right, 10,000 demons, da-da-da-da, right? So she says the presence of demons at the Kala can be interpreted in two distinct ways. One is to say that they're malevolent and they're trying to, like, undo the Talmud Torah. The other is to say, no, right? Demons are somewhat shy and reticent and would rather flee than fight. In spite of their sharp nature, however, demons seem magnetically attracted to the Babylonian rabbis and their Torah. right? That's the other way of reading this, right? They want to be in the base medrash, right? And in that case, what is the Gemara really saying? Why do they hurt you in the base medrash? Why do you feel crowded? It's not their fault. They just want to learn Torah,
right?
Right? They're like the person sitting next to you who happens to squash against you, right? So she says, if you take it together, what that means is that demons mark both the periphery, abandoned space, the edge of the abandoned world, and the center, right? So I'll just jump to a conclusion for a second. The spaces, so the four Talmudic texts discussed here in depth and the questions they raise point in two ways that the rabbis thought with demons in order to turn place into space. Geography overlaid with what De Certeau calls a polyvalent unity of conflictual programs or contractual proximities. The spaces of Babylonia were shared and negotiated across religions and ethnic groups. Though the rabbis were at times silent about their interactions with these populations, they used demonic discourse to stake out their claim to a particular spatial experience of their world and to construct themselves as the most qualified and perhaps the only one qualified to deal with the demonic danger. Demons demarcate the danger of the periphery of the rabbinic world or abandoned buildings, empty spaces, and dark corners. But they also prioritize the center. Right? Demons reflect the value that the rabbis see in their own spaces, the home, the house of study, and the Babylonian rabbinic center as a whole. The rabbinic concern about demons is mirrored in demonic interest in rabbis. Demonic interest validates the rabbinic project and the rabbis as the teachers of Torah. The rabbis integrate demons into their expansive world organized through rabbinic law. The demon is mapped onto rabbinic spaces in ways that give both more structure and more meaning. Right, so what she points out is whatever you think demons are, right? If you actually follow the patterns, Chazal think with demons, right? I mean, what are they really saying, right? They're saying, right, on the one hand, sometimes they'll use demons to say, this is society, that's out of society. How do I know? There are demons there. But the other hand, they'll say, there are these forces that are not quite human, maybe sometimes malevolent, but, right, they also attract themselves to where? Right? To the good places. So when they talk about demons, sometimes they're using demons to say, this is the scary there. And sometimes they're saying, this is like the most important place, and therefore everyone wants to get it, including the demons. Right? So I think that this article is very helpful because it says, listen, whatever you think demons are, right, whether you think they're literal or never literal or sometimes literal, right, just like sick, right, sometimes literal, sometimes not, it's important sometimes, and we could do this in many places, to say, okay, whatever you think demons are, whatever they thought, or why are they telling us this, right? So one is she's saying because that was how they talked. This is the important, this is the center of our world, and this is the outskirts of our world. How do I know? Demons, right? She then goes farther, and this she develops more in her dissertation. He says, it's clear from the Kala case that having a million demons there is a siman of what?
Importance.
Importance, right? The demons are packed, right? They're packed into the base medrash. So she suggests, so why, if that's the case, then the rabbis might use demon talk to also explain their significance compared to who else? So it could be the other religions, but there's someone's a little bit more surprising, and that is there's an ongoing dispute between who? Not yet. Between Bavel and Eretz Israel. Remember what the Gemara says in Psachim? We care. But remember, what did the Gemara say in Brachot? Talmidei Chachamim have to care because their clothes get worn out because the demons are only on top of the Talmidei Chachamim. She suggests, well, at some level, what might Chazal be saying when they say, we care about them? And the people in Eretz Yisrael don't care about them. Because? Because they don't care as much. Like the because the demons don't care about them because they don't have as much Torah. Right? Remember, if the demons flock to Torah, it would be very odd for them not to be in Eretz Yisrael unless, right? Part of what they're saying is, we have to care about them because, you know, we're chashuv. The demons are all around here. So we have to care. We're a kapit and in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Right? What they're saying is we're more chashuv because the demons want to come to us, right? And they don't necessarily care about going to right to Eretz Israel. Another point that she makes, which I think is very important, is that, again, whatever you think demons are, real, not real, what is the effect of Chazal halachaizing it? And again, her dissertation is primarily about the sugya in Pesachim. Now, if you remember, what's the point of how do we get into it in Pesachim? Do you remember how we got to it? The Gemara asks, why are you allowed to have Arba Kosev? Isn't that mandating, right, Zugo, right, which is just inviting demons? So the Gemara goes to all type of answers, right? And the Gemara ends up at some point saying, what's the answer? Since each one is a mitzvah, it each counts by itself, right? And therefore, it's four, but it's really four ones, right? So she goes through many examples. And again, whether you believe in demons, you don't believe in demons. She said, like we said before, one of the things that Chazal's talk about demons proves is that they're not dualists, right? Another is they use it to talk about space. But she said there's another thing they do, which is to say there's no such thing which is outside the purview of religion. Right? Part of dualism, right? Part of it was there's religion and then there's all these things that are not under the auspices of religion. But what is like the fundamental view of Bava? We've talked about this in other Agadotot. Everything can be brought into the Beis Medrash. Everything. Right? Right? She says that some of that's what Chazal are doing, is that Chazal are saying, whatever you think demons are, by giving all these rules and saying, well, oh, the Arba Kosov may be Zugo, but it breaks the rules. Why? Because the demons know the difference between whether it's four mitzvot, so it's four ones, or four, which is two twos.
Of course they do.
Right? And the answer is, right, what's the answer for Chazal and Bavel?
Because they learn.
No, what's the answer? It's not that they learn, but it's maybe they also learn. That is true. But what else is important in this story for them? Is that they're subject to halacha, right? Yeah. Right. Yes, you have Ashmedai who will learn Torah, but also sleep with Nida. But right. But clearly, the demons are not. What it does is it means that even demons are not free from religion, right? So again, whatever they believe. Right? They're making a very powerful theological statement when they do something like that, which is there is nothing in the entire universe, even if it's evil, even if it's going to break halacha, that is fundamentally outside the purview of halacha. And that's a very important theological claim, right? Again, whatever you think demons are, the fact that Chazal think that they will respect the halacha of Arba Kosod, and they won't treat it as zugot, right? That's a very powerful way of saying that there's nothing outside the auspices of halacha, right? And I think, again, part of the reason I told her I really love this dissertation, I'm not going to go through everything in this 599 pages in her dissertation. Sorry, 559, I take it back. 559 pages. I'm sorry, 559 pages.
Only 559, not 599.
I'm sorry. Okay? 559. I'm sorry. Okay? But I do think that, again, for me, what's important is not just understanding are there demons or not demons. But whether you think there are or not, to realize that when Chazal talk in demon talk, right, they're actually making important theological claims along the way. Right? Like, everything is subject to halacha. Like, demons aren't evil and our angels aren't automatically good, meaning there isn't dualism. Right? To realize that toch today, even if we don't understand what all the agadotos mean, right? And even if we don't really know whether we should believe it and whether they believed in whatever, to realize that what they choose to talk about in demons in terms of where are they found, right? What rules are they controlled by, right? Who are they attracted to? They're actually doing important theological work,
yeah.
Right? And therefore, again, can I answer every single one? Maybe not.
So it's built up right? Like her first kind of a thing.
Meaning it's saying, listen, whether or not they're real,
yeah.
Right? That's the point what, is, right, that part of when you read the Agadata is sometimes maybe you have a very localized thing. Oh, this is a metaphor. Right? And sometimes the answer is, right? Now, could it be that some of them are dreams like Ram Ram Ram? Yes. Could it be that some of them are Chazal retelling Zoroastrian myths? Sure. Right? Who knows? Right? So I'm just going to read you a little bit from her conclusion here, of her dissertation. She says, properly situating rabbinic discourse about demons in the broader pool of demonic discourse available in late antiquity Babylonia illuminates particular trends. Whether consciously or unconsciously, rabbinic discourse about demons aligns largely with ancient Mesopotamian demonic discourse in content and with contemporaneous Zoroastrian demonic discourse in form. Thus, demons are constructed primarily as neutral intermediary beings who are capricious and dangerous when provoked, yet are also subjects, agents, disciples, and teachings of rabbinic law. Yet the Babylonian rabbis construct demons largely through legal discourse in the context of broader halakhic discussions in the Babylonian Talmud. What can account for the Babylonian rabbis' distinctive bricolage? I don't know what that means. In their discourse about demons, the rabbis' trend towards legalization can be largely explained as part of the Babylonian rabbi's broader treatment of everything they encountered through legal discourse. For the rabbis, then, demons were not separate or distinct from the religious and legal world within which they lived. They were not consigned to a realm of non-normative magic, myth, or folk superstition. Demons were normative, and like all normative aspects of the rabbinic world, they were constructed, organized, and controlled through halakha. This legalizing trend is one which was popular in Sasanian Babylonia. Its analog can be seen in a range of Zoroastrian works, etc. Modern culture associates the demonic with evil, right? Zoroastrians, Christians did the same. Against these backdrops, the rabbi's construction of demons as neutral subjects of rabbinic law is somewhat surprising. However, any group's attitude towards and construction of semi-divine beings is part of their broader, holistic, theological, and legal worldview. The rabbi's discursive move, like that of the Zoroastrian Christians, is entirely reasonable when viewed within the constraints and contours of their broader theology. Zoroastrians were dualist, and as such had the option of seeing demons as thoroughly evil. However, portraying demons as evil intermediary being causes theological problems for the monotheistic rabbis. In dealing with demons, the rabbis had the option of three theological positions. First, that God is somewhat evil and has evil minions. Second, that God is entirely good and demons are somehow evil beings outside of divine control. Or third, that God is good and has created demons who are themselves, or if not entirely good, at least not evil. The rabbis of the Babylonian chose this third option. Demons were at worst capricious and dangerous when threatened, at best legal actors in the rabbinic system. The rabbinic construction of demons as neutral, thus aligned in content with ancient Mesopotamian Ugaritic conceptions of the world. Perhaps, ironically, the rabbinic conception of demons fit into their monotheistic theology had more in common with early polytheistic traditions than did with contemporary dualistic or monotheistic traditions. And yet, this commonality is not as surprising as it might initially appear. Both rabbinic Judaism and ancient Mesopotamian Ugaritic religions imagine the divine as complex, multivalent, and at least in part beyond the understanding of human beings. These earlier polytheistic pantheons contained a wide range of gods and goddesses within particular areas of influence, personalities, and favorites among humankind. The same god could be benevolent, cruel god, etc. While the rabbis were firmly committed to God's essential goodness, they recognized the complexity of God's presence and actions in human life. This complexity had more in common with the multivalency of a religious pantheon than it did with the strict dualist division of the world into good and evil. The rabbinic subjugation of the demonic to halakha functioned therefore as a response to unseen dangers, but also as a response to the potential threat to monotheism posed by a world in which multiple superhuman beings affected the human world. While the rabbinic portrayal of demons as neutral and capricious mirrored that of early polytheistic religious traditions, the rabbi did not entirely fit the polytheistic mold, obviously. For the rabbis, demons were created by the one true God and functioned within the divine system handed over to the rabbis themselves to construct and maintain. Demons followed the dicta of God as interpreted by the rabbis. As such, they were largely not harmful to those who also followed the rabbinic teachings about demons. Right? I thought this was a great dissertation because it's great because what she's saying is, listen, whatever you think demons are, realize that they're doing something really important, right? They're saying that they're subject to halacha, they're not purely evil, which means that the world isn't dualist, right? Which means that halacha controls everything, right? They're accomplishing a lot. They're doing a lot of very important theological moves. And even if I don't know what demons are, and it doesn't even matter, what's beautiful about her piece is that it really doesn't matter. Right? It doesn't matter what demons are. The point is you can think demons are whatever they are, but it's accomplishing so much important work.
Do they do this intentionally?
Presumably. Right? And then she notes,
if they acted like this, then maybe this was just an outcome of it, but it might not have been the reason.
Okay, it's fine. So it emerges from it. Who cares? Right? She says, within the Babylonian rabbinic system, demons operate as enforcers of rabbinic teachings as well as external validation of rabbinic value. For the Babylonian rabbis, demons are only concerned with important people like the Babylonian rabbis themselves. Right? Demonic interest is a marker of inherent social worth, and demonic interest is one important element of the rabbis' claim to primacy over the non-rabbinic Jews of Babylonia, as well as the rabbis' late antiquity Roman Palestine. Rabbinic discourse about demons thus contributes to the Babylonian rabbis' self-formulation as a particular kind of elite. Right? You're saying, right, the real way to read demons is whether they exist or not, realize what they're doing. Right? They're saying, here's the outskirts of society, this is what's important. Right? Tamidicham are important, that's why demons care about them. Right? Demons are constrained by halacha, because halacha controls everything. Demons can be good, and they can be bad. They can learn Torah, and there can be good demons and bad demons, because there is no dualism. Right? Everything they're doing, yeah.
If they were included in this capacity, then why are they sometimes as like somewhat neutral figures, like dangerous if you cross them?
Right, so you're saying, but that's what they are, right? They're dangerous if you cross them, but don't cross them. Who tells you not to cross them? The rabbis, they tell you how not to cross them. That's the point, is that they could be dangerous, and halacha has something to say, right? That's a very powerful theological statement, that there are these things that could be good, could be bad. They're mostly...
that which is protected by halacha.
Exactly, right? Halacha protects you. That which is dangerous is when you relate to them not the way halacha wants you to, right? That's very important. And then she just ends the dissertation. The Bavli's creative synthesis of differing approaches to demons cannot be reduced to nebulous forms of influence. Instead, it is inflected by important elements of rabbinic culture, theology, and self-fashioning. Since demon functioned in multivalent ways in Babylonian rabbinic thought, the rabbi's construction of the demonic is itself multivalent, nuanced, and at times obscure. Perhaps the very complexity of the rabbinic approach to demons offers an entry point into the rabbinic project more broadly, with its contradictions, aspirations, debate, and rich blessings. This complexity is now ours to untangle and to savor. Right? Again, I really love this dissertation, because I really thought that, look, right? Like I said, we spent like 2 hours on do demons exist, do they not exist, right? But at some level, at the end of the day, I'm sort of left with refreshed, which is, if they exist, they don't exist, who cares? Right? What I care about more, now, I could go like, you know, some of them and go piece by piece and try to, right? I could get caught up in a Meiri-like thing, right? Which is, I don't believe in demons, so what do they mean? Every single line, right? Or I could say, listen, I have no idea what demons are, right? Maybe they exist, maybe they don't. I probably believe they don't, right? And I could go on the level of Ravaran Salvechik, but if I do that, okay. So now I don't have in my mind, in my heart, I don't have like the rabbis believe this and I don't, right? I don't have like a crisis of faith. But you're missing something. Right, what she does is says, whatever demons are, right? Like with everything else, Chazal used demons to talk about what's important in life. Where's society found, right? So how much does halacha control, right? Can halacha protect us, right? What is it that makes us safe, right? What is it that makes us unsafe, right? Who's more important? Talmid Chachamim, not Talmid Chachamim, Bavel, Eretz Yisrael, right? Right? When they say, zugot is really dangerous unless it's a mitzvah, right? They're saying something extremely powerful, right, about the place of halacha in the world, right? They really are, right? It's an amazing claim. It's an amazing conversation, right? And again, her point, which is by the end of the day, is it not obscure? Of course it's obscure. Do I know what every little one means? No. But what I was convinced of having read her dissertation is that beyond the question of do they not exist, what we have to do is say, okay, but what are Chazal doing, right? Why are they telling us all these stories? What emerges? Again, is it that they don't really believe in it and they're just using it as a language? Or they really believe this? I don't know, right? But the point is that what emerges is a non-dualist, halacha-controlled, right, world in which everything is rabbinic, right? Remember, Ashmodai is someone who lives in the basement, right, in the Beit Midrash. Right, in Shamayim, right? The king of the demons. He's also evil, but he still goes to the Beit Midrash, right? What is that saying? That even the king of the demons who will sleep with the wives during Nida, on most days what he does is he goes to the Beit Midrash, right? That's like a fascinating, right? That's a very powerful way of Chazal saying, right? Again, might there be more meanings to it? Yes, and I think that in that Gemara, Rabinovich's metaphorical read is brilliant, right? But in the end of the day, the fact that the king of the demons learns every day, even if that's not the pshat of the Agadata, someone who's listening to the Agadata, what do you get? Oh, the most important thing you could do in the world is learn Gemara. That's what everyone wants to do, even the king of the demons.
Right?
Right? Like, Think about what that does. If every time you talk about a demon, the demons go to the Beis Medrash and Shemayim. The demons are everywhere when you're in the Beis Medrash, right? You look at it and say, I don't know what demons are, and I'm scared of them and whatever, but Torah must be really important, right? Halacha must be really important. And if you say demons are everywhere, but Arba Kosot, they won't hurt you because it's four mitzvot, you're like, hey, mitzvot are really powerful, right? Mitzvot are really important, right? Right? That... Right, and if you say, oh, there are good demons and bad demons, you're like, oh, you mean there isn't such a thing as good and bad, the battles of life and light and dark, right? There's the good demons who tell us how to deal with, right?
I think that it's an interesting sort of rhetoric, right? These demons are, at least in the minds of the people being born, like sort of around that time, there are like a malevolent force.
Correct.
They're sort of like this like powerful, like outside figure. So if they see something as important, it's not like, oh, well, that thing must be evil. It's like, what's up with that?
Exactly, right there. Exactly, it's even like, you mean the cool kids, right, who don't really care about rules, even they want to show up to this, right? Like, yes, that's exactly what it is, right? It's a very powerful rhetoric. Okay, I'll just end with this and say, look, what we've done here is we dealt basically with one, which is, do they exist, and how do we deal with sort of our reality with Chazal, right? That was most of it, and then we dealt for like the last 45 minutes, which is, okay, whether or not they exist, what are Chazal accomplishing, broadly speaking? We dealt with a few different cases. Obviously, there are a lot of Agadot that are not going to work with this, right? You got to figure out, like when Chazal say, in three ways they're like angels, in three ways they're like human beings, they produce kids, and demons are born, and demons come from Adam, right? There's other things going on there, right? This doesn't explain everything, right? And the fact is, yes, a lot of the Gemara does focus on what do they look like, right? Do they have wings? Do they not have wings? Can you see them? Can you not see them? Right? There is a lot of discussion about their physical thing, and like I said, I'm not claiming that by the end of this, I know what every demon Gemara means.
Right.
Right? That's not my goal. It would take forever. Right? But those two things, to realize that one, right, there's this broad possibility of what it means for them to exist or not exist and how we relate to it. But two is whether or not you think they exist, right, the way Chazal talk about demons, broadly speaking, has very important theological things to say about their entire worldview. I think those two things are very important to walk away with. Right? Again, does that mean that local agadatot, right? Sometimes, like I said, sometimes an agadatot might really be purely metaphorical and not part of this discussion, right? And sometimes, is it possible Chazal really believed that they looked exactly like this and they're really just describing reality to you? Yeah, it's possible, right? I can't tell you I know every single one. But I am convinced that these are two separate questions. Right? The question of whether they exist, right? What her dissertation really convinced me of is that, right, some people might think, listen, it's a dichotomy. If they exist, then all the Gemara about demons are meant to teach you about things that exist. And if they don't exist, then it's metaphorical, and now you got to learn what it really means. Right. But the answer might be, regardless of whether they exist, the Gemara is still teaching you important things right. That are not just technical about how do I avoid demons, right? The discourse about demons is teaching you something regardless of the reality question, right. And therefore you have to judge it at both levels, right? And I just think that her approach in general, it's just brilliant, right? It, like, every piece of that dissertation, I was like, wow, this really, right? Bro, again, the details, you want to read it inside, I encourage you. I read the whole thing. I was like, I started off, I was like, I'm probably going to read the whole thing because once I start something, I finish it, but I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it. And then I was like, no, this is awesome, right? This is really good. She's making really good points about the way Chazal talk, right? What Chazal are doing, right? Okay, so that is... So at this point, if anyone wants more on demons, I will give you my file. It has 1,000 pages, it has all types of articles and makaros, and you can look from now until forever, right? Have we fleshed out every Gemara on demons? Obviously not. Have we fleshed out every Gemara even in Kiddushin? No. We've mostly skipped over the hardest of all the Agadotot in all of Shas, which is the seven-headed demon, because that seems to be an outlier, because it's the only time you meet a... Right, the Kiddushin, because that's the only time you meet like a really malevolent demon, and even that is in the base measures and fits certain things. That seems to be an outlier and deserves discussion of itself. Ain't well also. Let's go off, guys.